League 116, this is your podcast for week two, and we're taking a look at the professional or ethical expectations. And I've asked you to read some information before listening to this podcast. It's really important that you grasp these things, because ethical rules like the Illinois Rules of Professional Conduct for Attorneys apply to lawyers. We have to follow these rules. We take an oath to follow these rules. But those rules and expectations apply to you indirectly as someone working with a lawyer in the law. You should have a firm grasp of your state's ethical rules governing the legal profession. You should know what is allowed and what isn't allowed. If a paralegal violates, or a legal assistant violates, or some support person working for a lawyer violates the rules governing attorneys, it may result in a serious consequence for the client, for the lawyer, or for that person, the employee. So you're regulated indirectly by the codes and state laws governing the practice of law. If you yourself want to give legal advice or sell legal services, this is what you need. You need a bachelor's degree. You need to be admitted to law school. You need to earn your law degree. You need to pass your state's bar examination, which requires an extensive personal background investigation and exams, a professional responsibility exam, and the bar exam. Most states prohibit the unauthorized practice of law, so providing legal services or providing legal advice, it's a crime. It's a crime in Illinois, so don't do it. Now, after you complete your legal studies certificate or degree, you may have some knowledge of many areas of law. Areas of law that your family, your friends, your relatives, people who find out that you're taking this program or have completed this program may ask you about. Issues related to specific courses, especially this one. You can't give that advice. And I always make the promise that if I find out you're giving that advice, I will make the report that you are practicing law without a license. UPL, unauthorized practice of law. So again, if you want to work in a support position, and we need people across law and justice doing things for lawyers, doing things that you will learn to do in this program and in this course, there's plenty of great things you can do. If you want to give advice or provide legal services directly to individuals, you need to go get your law degree and pass the bar exam. Now, having said that, I will tell you that most of our graduates who did not go on to law school, and many did, many have, since I've been here, this is my 28th year, well over one a year of our former students have gone on to law school. As far as I know, every one of them has passed the bar exam the first time, primarily because what you learn in legal studies provides you a great leg up once you get to law school. You already know how to legal research. You already have had family law, civil litigation, a lot of the courses that you're going to have to take in law school. You have a good understanding about how to find and process and apply the law, way better than many of the people who head to law school without that sort of education. But If I have a question from someone about the law, they expect an answer because I can legally provide that answer. I lost my mother recently, but my mother, on a regular basis, would provide my cell phone number to people she didn't know, but might have run into at the dollar store, or out to lunch with her friends, or at the Hy-Vee, wherever. And they would talk about some legal issue, and she would inform them that her son was a lawyer, and then proceed to give my number, and I'd get a call from somebody, and they would expect an answer. If I went to the family reunion, the cousin who'd been divorced 4 or 5 times and had kids from each relationship and all sorts of drama and issues as a result would want to ask me dumb legal questions. If you do not have your law license, there's no expectation that you answered those questions. And so you have the out. And it's a great out, and our graduates will tell you it's a great thing. You can just say, I'm sorry, but I can't answer that. Now, you can refer them to your employer. And in fact, if it's a good client, good case, and you're working for a lawyer, they would probably prefer that you did refer those people to the office you work at. But you can't answer those questions yourself. Regarding the rules of professional conduct, I asked you to do some things and to read the preamble and, you know, take a dive into those rules. In a nutshell, as it applies to non-lawyers, and I'm going to focus on non-lawyers for a minute, you can do almost anything as long as the task is delegated by a lawyer, it's performed under a lawyer's supervision, you designate your status as being a non-lawyer, legal assistant, paralegal, whatever your title might be. The lawyer has to retain a direct relationship with the client, and the lawyer has to review and give final approval of the completed work. You may not give legal services directly to the public without supervision of a lawyer. You can't give legal advice. You can't accept or reject cases on behalf of a lawyer or firm. Every once in a while, I get a former student who calls and says, lawyer so-and-so wants me to decide whether we take the case. And I have to tell them, you need to go back to lawyer so-and-so and remind them of their ethical obligations and point them to the rule. And you've seen the rule if you've done what I asked you to do before listening. You can't set fees. Now, my current dean was also my paralegal a long time ago. And she would do intake of potential clients and then give me the information before I met with some of those individuals. And she very well might tell me that she would prefer we didn't take the case, or that she thought that we needed to have a higher fee because of some of her experience and knowing what the issues were. But she can't set those fees or decide whether we take the case. That's the lawyer's decision. You can't be a partner with a lawyer in any endeavor or business that would include in any manner the practice of law. You can't solicit cases for lawyers. Now, soliciting cases is different than making a referral. If somebody asks you a question and you say, oh yeah, our firm does that, and I can ask if they'd like to set up an appointment. Soliciting cases would be, you come up on an automobile accident at the corner of Knoxville and War Memorial and Peoria, and the traffic's backed up, but you're adjacent to where the accident occurred, and you exit your vehicle and start passing out your lawyer's cards. That's soliciting. You can't act as an advocate of a client before a tribunal or court, although there are some exceptions, primarily in the administrative areas. Some of you may know, heard municipal cases in Peoria and Pekin and East Peoria and Market Heights, Grief Corps, some other places. And in those settings, especially in the building code cases, we allowed non-lawyers to appear as an advocate on behalf of someone. Typically in administrative proceedings, Social Security that we'll study in this semester, in the administrative law course this semester, there are some provisions that allow non-lawyers to advocate on behalf of the person seeking disability. There's several important expectations of the rules, in particular regarding competence, communication, safekeeping, property, diligence, and many more, but you really need to pay attention to confidentiality. Without a client's prior consent, a lawyer may never reveal a client's confidence. This means not during or even after the representations have ceased, including after the client's passed away. And the definition of a confidence is very broad, so don't give out or let slip any information about your clients without their consent to anyone outside of the lawyer involved in the case and any other support staff in the office involved in the case. There's nobody at home, it's not your spouse or significant other before you go to sleep, no one. And you should reveal information about a client only to the extent it appears necessary to prevent the client from committing an act that might result in death or serious bodily harm. You should also pay attention to the rules against conflict of interest, especially important in litigation. And remember, family law is litigation, so it comes up a lot of times in family law, especially if someone's had multiple marriages or multiple divorces. You can't represent a person you're suing currently or someone who is adverse to another client in any pending matter, any other case. That's the one that comes up, as you can probably imagine, in divorces. You can't represent any party against a former client, another one that comes up in that family law arena, without the client's express written consent. And that's in any matter whatsoever, unless they give consent, express consent. And anytime you see the word express, and we use the word express with consent in the law, or express in other contexts, you should think written, signed. Do not represent a client if your own interests may be adverse to the client's. There's a perception, if not a real danger, that your representation may be compromised because of your interests, even if they're not. It's a may. If it may be adverse, walk away, move away. And then if you change employment, you're not supposed to work on matters adverse to a former client or share a former client's confidences. And the new employer is supposed to isolate you from any such potential conflicts. To summarize, attorneys are regulated by licensing requirements and by ethical rules of each state. The rules spell out the ethical and professional duties governing attorneys and the practice of law. Paralegals should always consult their state's ethical code. Legal assistance, whatever the title will be, anyone who's supporting a lawyer or working as a non-lawyer in the law should learn about the specific rules for which the lawyer's accountable, and by the lawyer being accountable, you accountable as well. You're regulated indirectly by these attorney ethical rules, code of professional responsibility. You should remember that state laws prohibit non-lawyers from engaging in unauthorized practice of law, and that this could be a crime. And it is in Illinois. There are some, and in varying states, it seems to ebb and flow. It starts and then it stops. Efforts to regulate non-lawyers or provide some sort of regulation for non-lawyers to do work that lawyers do. If you work in one of those states, or if it comes up in Illinois, you just learn the law. You should know where these rules are. You should know how these rules apply and to what you're doing in litigation especially. And you should avoid violating these rules. One last point. While these rules don't apply to non-lawyers, if you are working in an area in which a lawyer is your supervisor, and that lawyer is not abiding by the rules, I guarantee you two things. One, if you don't get your resume out and get away from that situation as fast as possible, you may have difficulty finding a job. Because two, that lawyer will eventually be caught. Something will happen. Things will fall apart. If someone's willing to skirt one rule, they're willing to skirt many. And in my experience, after many, many years, over three decades of being a lawyer and seeing many examples, it always happens. They always fall. And if you're still working for them at that time, regardless of your ability and regardless of your intention, you'll get wrapped up in it. And for you as much as me, as the lawyer, it's a reputation-driven business. Even if another employer may think you have the ability, they may think you could fill the role, they may appreciate your personality or how you might fit within their organization, if you've been exposed to unethical behavior, if you've worked in an environment where this was rampant and led to a lawyer being punished by the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, the Supreme Court, or disbarred, it's likely you're going to struggle finding employment opportunities because the other employers will just worry that it's too risky. So keep that in mind. It's probably the most important reason that you should know these rules, self-preservation. This is a podcast for week number 2 of civil litigation. If you need me, you know where to find me.